Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 322, Resolution Zero. Saturday, January 6th, 2024. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Each time I record an episode, I post show notes, photographs, and links to things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Listeners make contributions to this podcast via Ko-fi, and I am so thankful for all of the contributions I receive. You can become a member, or you can buy me a coffee with a one-time contribution. Each quarter, I do a prize drawing, and this past quarter, quarter four of 2023, the prize included lots of goodies from the New York Sheep and Wool Festival. Congrats to Amy Klotz, who is the winner, and Amy's prize pack will be going out soon. For the first quarter of 2024, I am collaborating with Sarah Ellis of Woolen Waves. She makes socks on her sock machine, and I am currently the very lucky recipient of several pairs of her socks. I would like to help her promote her new business and also give listeners of the Yarns at Yin Hu podcast an opportunity to win a pair of her fabulous socks. So I'll be working with Sarah to come up with the exact details of that. But if you make a contribution via Ko-fi to the Yarns at Yin Hu podcast anytime up until mid-March, you are entered into that drawing. Thanks so much. Hello, everyone, and welcome. It is a cold and raw afternoon here near Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania. We are expecting some pretty significant snow to start falling anytime. The road outside is pretty quiet, so I thought it would be a great time to sneak an episode in and let you know what I've been up to over the holiday season and what is up and coming. I don't know about you, but this year I just found the onslaught of planning and resolutions and words of the year and everything for 2024 to just put me into a state of overwhelm. I just don't want any of it this year. And my mind keeps turning to like, well, maybe I should make a plan. Well, maybe I should think about a make nine. Well, and then I push it all out. It's just not going to be that kind of a year for me, I don't think. I'm just going in without a plan. Actually, I think what I'm doing is I'm embracing what I already have in place. And this has been kind of a hot topic with students of mine. It's been a little bit of a theme since the beginning of this year that students arrive at my door with a lot of apologies for needing to back out of their promised participation in something or other. And they start, you know, being very sorry and listing all of the reasons why they can't do it. And I've started to take the stance of saying, look, it is mature of you to recognize that you can't do it all. And maybe instead of thinking about how you're saying no to such and such, you're actually saying yes to everything that you're already doing. This seems to help put them at ease. And I think as long as they are really reinvesting that time and energy into something they already care about and are committed to, and not just using it as excuse to sort of get out of some obligations, I think it can be a really healthy thing. And I think maybe one of the reasons I've been telling my students this all year is that it's also like a lesson I need for myself. That often happens in education. So instead of saying, you know, no to resolutions and tons of new plans, I'm saying yes to things that have already been sustaining me. And one of those things is the spinning that I've been doing and very much enjoying. I'm working on spinning Lenore's fleece. I have about 2.5 bats to go before I've spun all the singles and I can start plying. And I really have made a practice of doing this every single day since Black Friday. I'm loving it. And I think it's going to start being as necessary for me as yoga, which I have made a daily commitment to. It's been well over a year now. I don't know if it's been well over 2 years. I'm trying to figure out when I was doing it. I guess it's been about 1.5 years since I started doing weekday morning yoga. And I beef that up with usually at least one of the weekend days. I do a yoga practice in the morning also and extend it a little bit longer than my weekday mornings. And this has been good. It's been really good. It's been really helpful to wake up my body this way and get everything working and moving this way. And I think it's helping me combat some pain and some neuropathy symptoms. And I'm really grateful that I've invested in that practice. And so I think I'm going to be happy with that. I'm going to focus on each, you know, up and coming project that sort of grabs my attention and gets me excited. And not worry too much about a plan, which often dissolves anyway, and then I end up feeling bad about it. And I don't want to feel bad about anything. I just want to craft and knit and have a lot of fun with my work this year. So if that's where you are also, you've got a friend in me. And if you are working diligently and tirelessly on a set of goals and projects, I admire you. I applaud you. I'm watching along. I'm just not going to join in this time around. In this episode, I'm going to talk about some finished projects and one new cast on. And I have a poem for you at the close of the podcast. On the back porch are two projects. One is Core, K-O-R-E, a crocheted top that was a test crochet for Mesa Tomikawa. I crocheted this in Pearl Soho's linen quill and tussock, and I thoroughly enjoyed working on this project. It was a great reconnection with crochet. I think it's a fun, finished garment. It is easy to execute, and it's quite customizable. I like the playful nature of Mesa Tomikawa's pieces, and that she will be releasing this. When she releases the crochet version of this top, there will also be a knit version, and she does plan to do that sometime in January. This is very loose with contrast color ruffles and lines. You can do all ruffles, all lines, a combination of the two. And it's really fun to do them in like maybe unusual or kind of out of the box colors if you want to, something that will be striking. I chose lines and ruffles, and I did the ruffles in such a way that the bright saffron yellow is just peeking out from under the beautiful peachy pink Anjou pear. And in order to achieve that, I constructed each ruffle a little bit differently. I like the effect of that. I took some finished project photos, but I still have it in mind to do some styled photos. I just haven't gotten it all together yet with the photographer I want to work with and my own a little bit hectic schedule, but it's coming. And I encourage you to keep an eye on the designer and some of the things she has coming forward, and would definitely recommend this pattern. One thing I really liked, and I don't recall having done this formally when I did a lot of crochet, is that her directions for the crocheted neckline of this garment were easy to follow, but resulted in a really nicely shaped and sturdy neckline that you don't have to go back around and crochet around it to create a completed look. It's really great. So I like that a lot, and I will look forward to styling this piece called Core, K-O-R-E. I also completed the reversible scarf by Nicolette Corley. This is a pattern I started in the fall. It's a beautiful, squishy, reversible scarf with cable details. It's perfect for a farm yarn or a handspun yarn that's very round. My beautiful Rambouillet handspun was made for me by Emily, Fibertown Emily, and I over dyed the yarn with indigo. This creates a really handsome, squishy scarf. I did just under 9 repeats of the cable pattern, which, although I never memorized the pattern, there are only 3 different types of rows. And one of those is the row with the cables in it, which you only do like 4 times throughout the entire repeat. So all I needed to do was keep track of my rows with a row counter, which was very important, and then just glance at the pattern to see which type of row it was, and then I needed to look very little at the directions after I kind of got the hang of it. As the name suggests, this scarf is completely reversible. I really like the way the cables are constructed with a 1x1 rib. That allows the cables to be plush and visible on each side of the scarf, rather than what usually happens when you do cabling is you get one side of the fabric has a really nice cable and the other side has this kind of ugly convex look to it. This is perfect. It is reversible. It's kind of like a little bit of a knitting engineering genius from Nicolette Corley. This scarf is featured in issue 1 of Common Threads, which is put out through the Hudson Valley Textile Project. And when I saw it, I knew I wanted to knit the scarf, and I thought maybe it would become a gift, but I've fallen in love with it way too much to give it away. It's warm. It's squishy. I rolled it up when I was on a field trip recently that I was chaperoning, and I used it as a pillow. Even when I was working on it, I discovered that if I kind of lay it across my lap, it instantly warms up my lap. It's a perfect travel item, and really, I don't know, it's versatile, and I think it will go with a lot of my wardrobe. So this piece is staying with me, and I absolutely adore it. If you're looking for a scarf pattern, especially something that goes into like unisex territory, or you want something that would be perfect for a man, I think this scarf is a great choice. It lies nice and flat. It doesn't curl up on the sides or the ends, and it's really soothing and meditative to work. Once again, that's the Reversible Scarf by Nicolette Corley. After completing two projects, I was very eager to cast on my Tidal Yarns yarn purchase from Rhinebeck. I was so fortunate to have some time on Sunday morning at the New York Sheep and Wool Festival to meet Patricia and shop her booth. And I left with three skeins of her fingering weight yarn in a cochineal blend, which is kind of a beautiful purple color, and one skein of a contrasting weld, which is sort of a yellowish green. So I had it in mind to knit once again the Darta sweater because I like the fit. And the yardage is similar to the yardage I bought from Patricia, but I wanted to put some color work into it, and I wanted the color work to be on the body of the sweater instead of the yoke. I have a lot of sweaters with a color work yoke, and I really wanted to try something a little bit different. So I purchased the Pusteblumen cowl designed by Wollmuschi, which is stranded color work. There's no regular motif. It's definitely like a stranded color work imagery of a dandelion. I think that's the translation. Pusteblum is dandelion. And some other sort of leaves and grasses and really a beautiful botanical motif. And I purchased this cowl pattern thinking that what I would do is repeat that motif around the body of the sweater. And so I started working on some of the math for that. And the cowl has a 44 stitch count to it. So I multiplied that by 4 to get as close as I could to the Darta stitch count without going over. And I'm concerned that the sweater might be a little bit small. So I've given it a start, and I decided to do a split hem on the sweater. So I did a split hem in a twisted rib stitch. And then I joined those together and began working the colorwork motif. The yarn is knitting beautifully, and it has such a nice loft to it that I was able to go up quite a few needle sizes trying to get some additional circumference on this sweater. So I think with a few more rounds, the time has come for me to put the sweater on some try-it-on tubing and really check to see if this is something that will fit or if I need to take it out and maybe rethink the stitch count or even maybe take the chart a little bit into my own hands and see if I can add a few additional columns for the repeats so that I can get a bit closer to 200 stitches for the circumference. So I've been having fun with that, and it's been an interesting combination of using an established pattern but also doing some design work that is exciting to me because I'm trying to get my mind back into design mode a little bit again. And so I think this is a nice approach move to try really working a pattern, but in a very different way than I've done before. So once again, the basic pattern that I'm using is Darta by Inez Song, and that's in the Neons and Neutrals book. I've just knit this sweater with neon ruffles up the front. And then the color work is really a beautiful cowl. You should take a look at it if you're interested at all in color work. It's called Pusteblumen by Wollmuschi. I will link both of these in my show notes. In addition to knitting and crocheting and spinning, I've also been doing a bit of stitching and mending. One thing that I took the time to do over my holiday break was to put quite a few darns and patches into my Cambria duster. I absolutely love this very long unlined jacket. I sewed it with Merchant and Mills Woolsey, which is Lindsay Woolsey. It's a beautiful fabric. It has lovely drape and a little bit of sheen, but it is incredibly prone to runs. It's kind of like a linen wool double gauze. So the fabric is beautiful, but it's tricky to work with, and the inseams of the sleeves in particular have developed quite a few runs. And so I've been patching them with doing some darning, and then I decided to create some little patches as well. And I use fusible interfacing both on the fabric that I'm going to use for a patch, and I use fusible interfacing on the inside of a thin spot so that I have like a double layer sandwiching my double gauze fabric, and that helps to sturdy it up a little bit. These mends are definitely on the visible side of visible mending. But because they're on the inseam of the sleeve, they're not visible all the time. I'm kind of becoming more proud of this make as I continue to mend and wear it. And even though I would like to have another one in my future, it's an incredible amount of work because all of the seams are bound with bias tape. And I don't see myself making one of those again right away. So the story now is to just keep mending and wearing this original Cambria duster. I was given a very generous gift certificate from one of my students with whom I've been working a number of years. And I used it to make a purchase of a beautiful book on bojagi, which is a Korean form of stitching scraps of fabric together to make different kinds of new fabrics, garments, and other creations. This particular book is by Sarah Cook. It's absolutely gorgeous. And it's also very informative and instructive. So over the holiday season, I took out some scrap fabrics and some yellow thread. I've been very attracted to working with yellow. recently and learned, was very surprised to learn that yellow is kind of at the center of a Korean palette of colors. And so I've been working with yellow thread and practicing some of the different stitching techniques that are laid out in this Bojagi book. I haven't committed to any particular project or finished object yet. I'm just really working on learning and understanding the skills and also understanding how traditional requirements for fabrics. Korean stitchers use a lot of very gossamer type fabrics, silks and such. And I would like to use some things that I already have. So I'm trying to understand what in my possession might already work and what techniques might work best with those fabrics that are a little bit thicker than what is traditionally used with these methods. And so that's been a really interesting investigation. And in addition to enjoying the stitching itself, I'm just really engrossed with the beautiful photography and the objects that are pictured in this book. Some of them are new creations and some of them are photographs and descriptions of historical pieces. For off the shelf in this episode, I'm going to share a poem titled Candle Hat by Billy Collins. I was thinking back on a conversation I had with a colleague yesterday, and I don't remember how we got on this topic, but suddenly we were talking about whether or not her advanced placement art history students could get permission to wear candle hats, turn the lights off, and, you know, work on painting their own portraits during the AP class. And I said, oh, do you know that poem by Billy Collins? And she didn't. So this morning I was looking for a version of that poem that I could message to her, and I thought, well, that would be a great one to read on the podcast as well. So this is Candle Hat by Billy Collins. In most self-portraits, it is the face that dominates. Cezanne is a pair of eyes swimming in brush strokes. Van Gogh stares out of a halo of swirling darkness. Rembrandt looks relieved, as if he were taking a breather from painting the blinding of Samson. But in this one, Goya stands well back from the mirror and is seen posed in the clutter of his studio, addressing a canvas tilted back on a tall easel. He appears to be smiling out at us as if he knew we would be amused by the extraordinary hat on his head, which is fitted around the brim with candle holders, a device that allowed him to work into the night. You can only wonder what it would be like to be wearing such a chandelier on your head, as if you were a walking dining room or concert hall. But once you see this hat, there is no need to read any biography of Goya or to memorize his dates. To understand Goya, you only have to imagine him lighting the candles one by one, then placing the hat on his head, ready for a night of work. Imagine him surprising his wife with his new invention, then laughing like a birthday cake when she saw the glow. Imagine him flickering through the rooms of his house with all the shadows flying across the walls. Imagine a lost traveler knocking on his door one night in the hill country of Spain. "Come in," he would say. "I was just painting myself." As he stood in the doorway, holding up the wand of a brush, illuminated in the blaze of his famous candle hat. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you have a wonderful week and it contains time for the crafting you enjoy. Take care.